to No Filter Sports. This is September 10th, 2020. A big day in that the NFL begins tonight, believe it or not. Eli Zarrett here with Bob Page and Denny McClain. And, you know, the NFL is back. The first game, I guess you could say, since the Super Bowl. And who do we have tonight on Thursday Night Football? Not just Patrick Mahomes, who led a 21-0 Chiefs comeback to win the Super Bowl, then get a $50 million a year contract to be the MVP. And you got him going up against a Deshaun Watson, who just signed a $160 million.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. Now, Eli, since you mentioned that comeback by Mahomes, the last time, remember this, that Kansas City played host to Houston? Was in the playoffs just last January. The Texans got blown out 51-31 yep. after they led 24-0 early in the second quarter, right. And Mahomes let them back.
That was the Derrick Henry game where they were just running all over him. Yes. So, you know, the NFL has only had, they've had a flawless training camp. In terms of COVID, they've been near perfect. Yep. There's only been one player who's been reported. We'll see what happens when they start to travel and everything. But, you know, there's money in these leagues, these pro leagues. The NBA has pulled it off. Baseball, after a rocky start, seems to be doing a lot better. So it seems like the pro leagues, with the money behind them and the best medical experts they can find, have done a very good job, an exemplary job, surprisingly even, of making the league sustain through this terrible episode.
Well, here's a big issue with respect to this, though. It's not just the players in this case, but a lot of teams, it's a mixed bag around the NFL, are going to allow fans. Will there be fans at Arrowhead Thursday night? Were there? Yes. The Chiefs on August 17th announced plans to allow 22% full capacity mm-hmm. to attend this game. Other teams, the Lions, of course, are not going to allow anybody the first two games. The Giants and Jets likely will not have fans all season because of the big problems they've had with coronavirus here in the New York City area.
Well, now, LSU is also going to allow about 26,000 fans to play this year, too. But the governor just issued an order that every player must wear a face mask during the game.
Governor Whitmer in Michigan, that's high school football. Yeah.
Well, that's LSU. That's LSU also. Oh,
seriously, LSU, the players have to wear on the field?
Yes,
the
isn't that crazy?
Mask. Yep, face mask. That's what he said.
Can it be a one of the little little lightweight little masks that are commonly worn? Little
I don't know. Ones? I don't know. They didn't define it. They just said they'd all be wearing face masks. Wow. And then as far as Kansas City playing this year, everybody else is playing for the second position in the championship again for one reason. They own it. I mean, this kid is as good as we've ever seen in our life. And hopefully he stays healthy and he can play 10.
I want to wait a little bit on that.
Bob, can I finish, please, once? And bottom line simply is that, you know, the first 5 or 6 minutes of this game tonight will be full of adrenaline. Whatever happens the first 5 or 6 minutes will be lucky breaks, bounces, bad bounces, good bounces, passes that are dropped and things like that. And then once they settle down after 5 or 6 minutes, we'll see the old NFL really rock and roll. I'm excited about starting this. First time in a long time I've been excited.
Well, as we know, it doesn't matter if Kansas City falls behind. As Bob said, they were down, was it down 24-0? And they were down 21-10 at the half, I think, in the Super Bowl.
So, from a guy who is a professional baseball star, I'm surprised that you're saying what you're saying. Because anything can happen in any sport, we don't know. You're going to award the Super Bowl championship again to Kansas City?
I am. I can't see anybody beating them. I'm sorry. They got the greatest quarterback. As far as I'm concerned right now, for the last 2 years, they got the greatest quarterback of all time. The kid, all he does is win, no matter if he's up or down or in between. All he does is win.
I thought Bobby, you were going to knock him for Denny for saying that the first 4 or 5 minutes. I mean, hey, last night the Braves were down 2-0 before they won 29.
You guys keep talking about tonight and last night. By the time most people hear this, the game's Thursday night's going to be over. Okay,
I got you. You're right. Last night, Wednesday night, the Braves were down 2-0 before scoring 29 runs. But since we're on the NFL, unless you have anything else to say about that game, because it all has to unfold. Obviously, the lack of fans is going to make a difference, even having few fans there. I'm sorry, did you say they're going to be some fans?
They're going to allow 22% capacity. Yeah. The Dolphins are going to have 13,000 fans. That's their cap coming up here on Sunday when they play. It's going to be interesting. But here's my question, boys. And I've been talking about this, and we've been talking about this for a long time with respect to baseball. I want to know, if the NFL has a plan in place for if and when a player just tests positive. Will they panic like baseball has done and at the last minute cancel a game if one guy tests positive on Sunday morning? Now, starting this season, game day active rosters in the NFL, which used to be limited to 46, can include up to 48 players, providing that at least 8 of those 48 are offensive linemen. If not, then you go back to 47. Practice squads have also been increased to 20 players in the NFL. You're looking at 68 guys. And again, my question, if one or two guys test positive on game day, you're going to cancel the game? Really?
Oh, no. That's a good question. I don't know.
They may postpone the game for another week or so because, you know what? They not only do they have to confirm that the guy is positive, but now they got to confirm to see he's been around the whole team. Who's he been with? Where did he pick it up? Because if he's got it, he got it from possibly somebody on the team. So now they got to test everybody. I mean, and then they do a triple testing in the NFL, as I understand it, before the kid can come back on the field and play. But this is going to be what I'm impressed with all of the sports now, and especially the NHL. I mean, because they've been super clean from the beginning. How well the players have become so responsible in the last month or so, and staying out of the areas that they don't need to be in, and sooner or later, one day they can enjoy all of the greatness of that this kind of money can buy.
Well, they've seen those in the NBA and Major League Baseball too that erred. Remember those White Sox pitchers the blanket denunciation by their teammates and the rest of the league makes them pariahs. And so it's taken a little bit of that, a little bit of punishment to say, hey, I better follow the rules. Most people, will follow the rules when they see that the punishment is more severe than they thought it would be. So,
okay. Now here's another issue. The Bills open the season Sunday in Buffalo against the Jets, and Sean McDermott is pissed off. He says, quote, "I think it's honestly ridiculous. There's going to be on the surface what appears to be a playing field that's like this inconsistently across the league with the different away stadiums." Vikings coach Mike Zimmer says it's going to be very hard because some stadiums are allowing people in. And it looks like we're not going to be able to have any fans in Minnesota, which really stinks because we have unbelievable fans and they make our place rock every Sunday. So the teams that are not allowing people in, they're not going to have any kind of home field advantage, but other teams can have people and they're going to have a home field advantage.
Very legitimate thing, totally legit to bring that up.
Yeah. And, all they're trying to do is to protect the fans and protect the players. I mean, that's really what it gets down to.
Some of them are, but the point is that others are letting fans in.
That's my point. I mean, the clubs that are not allowing them in are taking the extra step of protecting their fans and protecting, parking lot festivities that go on before every game. Yeah. None of the teams are apparently going to have festivities before the game anymore. So, you know what? A lot of things have changed. This is now the world of COVID. And we're going to have to, sooner or later, we got to all jump in 110% and do it the right way.
You got entire leagues the Pac-12 and the Big Ten that aren't playing at all.
And others are. Now, here's another issue, boys. Okay, let's think about this now. When it comes down to money, is it going to be worth it to have a limited number of fans in NFL stadiums? It actually isn't, according to an article on NBC Sports this week. Not that the teams won't make any money, it's that they won't make enough money to justify the hassles. You break down the stadium operating costs, revenue, tickets, parking, concessions, from having, let's say, 15,000 fans in a stadium. That's about $2.4 million in extra money for a franchise for the entire year. So we're looking at billionaire owners who already are making a healthy profit from the league's TV deal by itself. And according to the NBC article, it's not worth the trouble. Don't even bother if you can't have sellout crowds.
Well, I don't think there was so much money burned. I mean, look at the NBA had to pay $1.5 million every day to just keep people in the bubble. I think an owner who would be able to, through the laws of his state or the rules that have stayed under COVID, not to have people in the stands to save money would be absurd. You should get the home field advantage if the league isn't going to legislate that some can have it and some not. Of course, you got like in the SEC, all 10 schools are going to allow fans. So it's equal down the line. Now, the Lions will open Sunday with the Bears. And if anybody thinks they know what's going to happen in, with this these teams in this season, then you're a lot smarter.
Well, Danny knows. Ask him about his beloved Bears quarterback. He knows what's going to happen.
Well my Mitch Trubisky does well against the Lions, doesn't he?
Yeah, yes, he does. He does very well against the Lions. But this is a new year, and Trubisky is – I'll tell you one thing. They say he stepped up his game because he had Foles competing with him all spring. So we'll see what happens. But I it'll be the first time, I think, in my life that I've never bet on the Bears in a football game. And I'm just I'm going to watch that game and just pray and hope that Trubisky or Trubisky or whatever the hell his name is.
Trubisky.
You know, his problem is he makes a lot of completions. I think he's 60-some percent, but they're like 4 yards, 3 yards, 2 yards. I mean, if you could get the ball down the field, they score a lot more points, because I think they were 29th or 30th in the league last year in points scored. So they were way down in the ladder, and that's the reason why, although he was hurt some last year.
Well, your problem, Danny, is that you always refer, understandably, to your hometown Chicago Bears as right. We. Then in the next breath, you refer to the FLs as we. Give me a problem. I mean, who are you
Listen,
rooting for
pull,
on Sunday?
I pull for the Lions, too, but I'm a Bears fan. I'm sorry.
All right. That's great. Okay.
Well, the Lions have lost 9 straight games. I'd forgotten that they ended the season with 9 straight losses. I forgot when they were 3-2-1. So they're 3-point favorites coming off 9.
Eli, it's more than that. I'm reading this stuff on the internet, and Brandon will corroborate this, is that after what happened to the 49ers last year, coming out of almost nowhere to somehow get to the Super Bowls, the chic pick this year is for the Detroit Lions to duplicate that maybe they're going to be a hell of a lot better than people think and gulp actually make the playoffs. I don't know.
Well, you know, this is the make it or break it year, which seems to be the consensus on the Quinn Patricia tandem at the top. And one of the other things is going to have, they're either going to be gloriously retained or ignominiously fired. So it's very interesting. To watch a game with no fans is going to be fascinating. Football is back. Stafford's healthy. They got Adrian Peterson now in the backfield. They got some new look on defense. This is Patricia's scheme should be close to fully installed this year. So we shall see. Some interesting things.
Wait a minute. But I don't know how many weeks ago it was. We were talking about the Lions then too, and I just mentioned I think they're going to be in the playoffs this year. I really do. They got some real good linemen this year, and good things can happen. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah.
How about college football for those who like it better? Notre Dame versus Duke on NBC Saturday afternoon. And then don't forget Clemson at Wake Forest with our own Larry Sorensen doing color commentary on the Wake Radio Network. He also does football, not just baseball at Wake Forest. So we're going to have something to watch. Army plays over the weekend. I mean, it's good that we have some football, for goodness sake.
Do you understand? Yeah. Did you hear that this is the 20th time in history that today or Thursday, September 10th, all four leagues will be in action. All four major sports, hockey, basketball, baseball, and football will all have games on this day. So COVID has created some rather unique situations. Did you, the most surprising comment I heard since we did the last show was Leonard Fournette. That one kind of blew my mind as he goes from the Jaguars cutting him. Now he's the Tampa Bay. And listen to this soundbite where he said it's the first time that he's been able to play with a quality guy under center. Listen to what he had to say.
You know, football is football. I've been playing the same game for 25 years. And, for the first time in my life, I really have a quarterback. So that's an eye-opener for me. And not a lot of pressure comes. It's going to come on me. You know, I guess it's going to be a lot of with me and him. And a lot of other guys on offense.
Him being, of course, Tom Brady, which is a slight to Blake Bortles, Nick Foles, and Gardner Minshew. It's the way you ask questions.
Yes.
Or the way you can, if he had said, you know, with all due respect to Bortles, Foles, and Minshew, now I got a guy who's a Hall of Famer, it makes a difference. But the same,
like guys who speak their minds. I like guys who speak their minds.
And well,
like
there's that. One thing about it, too, that Tom is going to be the center of attention all year long. He's going to get the hoorays for the wins, and he's going to get the boos for the losses. He's going to take all the heat that you can take. And they're giving him a ton of money, and he is supposed to be the savior down in Tampa Bay.
Well, he's got Gronk too.
They can get there.
Arizona's playing somebody, I think, at 4 o'clock 49ers. On Sunday. So in those smaller markets out west, they have televised the Arizona game.
Yeah.
The rest of the country is going to see the Tampa game. Wonder why. Tom Brady's through. Are you going to watch that 4 o'clock game on Sunday, folks?
I am. Bob, you just kind of as a throwaway, the Arizona's opening at San Francisco.
Well, that's a good game.
But with the wildfires out there,
yeah,
there's a chance that game could get called off if the number of particles, whatever it's called, it's the air quality index. If it goes up to 200, they're going to have to cancel that game. Right now, it's kind of safe at 70. They say as of Wednesday, September 9th. However, the skies are all red, and it's scary. By the way, before we get off pro football, let's talk about our guest today, the great, and I can say that without being an exaggeration.
He's a great player.
Played 10 years here. His career ended in 85 after his 11th year because he couldn't play in 1980 because of injuries, with a neck injury that nearly paralyzed him. And he's become a champion for paralysis research. So we're going to talk to a guy who last year was put on the all-time 100-year Lions team, the great Doug English, a four-time Pro Bowler.
Who was the other defensive tackle? I didn't see that.
Columbus.
It better have been my boyhood hero, Alex Karras.
The only other what?
Defensive tackle.
I'll tell you.
You got it right there?
Was that not Lomas, was it?
Well, no.
Lomas is an offensive line.
But let's see here. You've got Bubba Baker on defense. You got Baker.
Bubba Baker.
Barney, Benny Blades. Let's see what else. You got Jack Christensen. Let's see. Jimmy David is, but he played in the 50s defensive back.
Safety Yale Larry now. Better be there.
English, obviously.
Yale Larry on that team? Another good Texas boy.
Yes, punter Yale Larry.
Punter. Yale Larry. Oh, not safety.
You got a cornerback Dick Knight, Trade Lane. Alex Karras, yes. Dick LeBeau, Mike Lucci. Mm-hmm. Who else here? Let's see. Porsche.
Well, if Lucci's on the team, Lucci was a middle linebacker. Where's Joe Schmidt?
Joe Schmidt's there too. They had 38 guys, so they made
Okay. I get it. Okay.
Spielman also. So we'll talk to Doug English coming up later.
Joey Harrington on there? No.
No, you know, I'm going to go over this with Doug, but I look back at this era. Obviously, I do my research for these. I'll tell you about it. Well, I'll do it now. I do my research, and there were so many years where they were so close, where Freddie Scott would drop a touchdown on the back of the
year.
I know. About 1981. Where in 1980, they go 4-0 with another one. Bites the dust. We'll go over that one with him. And then they finished 9-7. So did Minnesota, but they lose in the tiebreaker. And then
we called Rick Kane mistake running back. They did the best they could, you know, but it was painful. And, you know, I always say this about being such a fan as I was of the 1968 Tigers of Denny McClain, that it was amazing that year because there was a different hero every night. That's what happens when you got a great team in any sport. You got a bad team, it's a different goat every night. Somebody else loses the game every game.
Let's get into the Tigers a little bit after their 19-0 they lost yesterday. That's even a blowout in football, not to mention baseball.
I thought that's what it was. I thought that Milwaukee scored the last touchdown, went for two, and they failed. Was that baseball?
It's incredible.
Dr. Yeldo again, open doing business as he's done for tens of thousands of Detroiters, giving life-changing procedures that give you perfect eyesight, oftentimes better. Most of his LASIK patients get better than 20/20 vision 2015 or so, which I got when I originally had LASIK. It's stunning the lifestyle change that getting one of these surgeries has. And if you're over 45, LASIK isn't for you because you got trouble reading. And the way to solve that problem is to get these multifocal lens implants. You'll see the microscopic print without reading glasses. Throw those readers away. Throw it all away. This isn't hype. These surgeries are the safest with fewest side effects in all of medicine. Get a free evaluation. Find out which procedure will change your life in ways you can only imagine. You'll get $1,500 off if you call and tell them No Filter Sports sent you. And if you happen to get somebody to go in with you to get surgery, you'll get half off on yours. So call 1-800-398-EYES. Go to YaldenWeisCenter.com and tell them No Filter Sports sent you for these great discounts. Hey, Star of Lincoln. Everybody in Michigan knows Lincoln's legacy of cars. In buying a Lincoln, you'll get both the buying and service elements A1. It's why Hoop McInerney Star Lincoln leads the field. Listen to some of these five-star reviews they got in July. Great. Courteous, helpful, from having what I wanted to test drive it multiple times, completing the paperwork from home, finally walking in and signing. What a smooth process. Another said, service was fast. All my concerns were addressed. I truly enjoy the Lincoln experience at Star. I got my last six cars from Star, Detroit's premier Lincoln dealership. Make an appointment at 248-354-4900 or buy effortlessly online at starlincoln.com. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
So well, things are going to be better at Tigers down at the ballpark now because Jordan Zimmermann is coming back, and he'll stabilize that pitching staff.
Well, he's going to start again. We're taping this Thursday morning. You already know what happened to him, but he's going to start the second game of this doubleheader Thursday at St. Louis against the Cardinals. And you look at what might happen with him and what we expect to happen. Now you look at Tarik Skubal, who pitched in the first game on Thursday afternoon. He's looked so good, and this is almost a must-win situation. With the Tigers, and they can't afford to lose games now. So Skubal's up against it, and then we'll pray as far as Zimmermann goes.
Guys, I don't know if you've been watching the same team I've been watching all year, but the pitching is not there. It's not hardly there. It's not barely there.
Can I give you a stat, Danny, to help you? I'll give you a stat to let you continue.
Okay.
29th of 30 in ERA at 5.7. So, yeah. Yes.
You can't win. You can't win with an ERA up there. You know, and then they sent a bunch of guys down to Toledo, called up Zimmermann and Ramirez. So they're trying to find something that works. It's too late to find anything that works. And when you think about Zimmermann, he was 1-13 last season. With a 7 ERA, 6.91. But obviously, I was surprised they didn't cut him loose this past year and just eat the salary. But, and now he's been on a disabled list for, 45, 60 days
something. Danny, I'm surprised you would say this in this sense. They're 19-22. They're battling for eighth place. This is as of Thursday. They're going to play this afternoon, so that could change by the time you hear this. But they're 19-22, eighth place. They're only trailing the Yankees, 22-21. So that would be 2.5 games ahead of them. And the Orioles, who are equally as awful as they were last year. Think of how crazy it's been, all right? Even though they lost 19-0 to the Brewers yesterday. Last year, the Yankees won 103 games. The Tigers lost 114. Yet here they are battling the Yankees. Right, it's stunning.
Well, that's a troubled ball club right there, the New York Yankees.
I know. And the other one is look at the Marlins. The Marlins are 19-19. Yeah. They're in the race. Last year they lost 105 games, I believe it was. So it's
yeah, but their linebackers didn't back up the run the other day. You know, I was saying on Wednesday night the defense didn't play well at all, so they allowed Atlanta to score 29 runs against them. You know,
one short of the all-time record.
But you know, Eli, you look at clubs like Miami and you look at clubs like the Detroit Tigers, and you have to keep your eyes on the prize, as they say. If you called off the season today, they would both have had very successful seasons. Didn't expect the Tigers to win the World Series this year with the awful, awful problems they've had. Tigers have made a lot of progress. We've seen a lot of these kids, and a lot of these kids have been impressive.
41 games they've played. Now, 41 games in a regular season gets you to mid-May. So this would send Sparky used to say, you don't even start paying attention until the first quarter of the season,
absolutely,
which is 40 and a half games. Here they are at 41 games, and they're in contention. So we said this at the beginning of this crazy season. Who knows? It, Jordan Zimmermann could be hot. But Matthew Boyd can't pitch this bad anymore, can he? And Jose and Joe
Hibbert has lowered his ERA. What do you mean can't pitch this badly again? I mean, come on now. Except for one start all year, for God's sakes, he's been getting hammered.
He gave up two home runs the previous one before this, and he lost 2-0. But, Danny, let me ask you a question about Matthew Boyd. You're running the Tigers right now. What are you going to do with Matthew Boyd at this moment?
I'm going to trade him. He's left-handed.
He doesn't have any value.
Yes, there is. There's somebody out there that can take him and fix him. He's all over the place. His head is moving.
Don't trade him. Get somebody else to fix him for Detroit.
You know what?
Well,
managers use their friends to be with them in a ball club, And that's what's going on here. I just don't think they've got the personnel, coaching-wise, to straighten out some of these kids because it's so basic also. The good turn, the head not moving, the good kick, the pitching with the legs. I mean, you don't see much of that anymore. And that's one of the reasons why we're seeing so many home runs and so many bad plays.
I guess the question is, Denny, is he hasn't forgotten how to pitch. He's pitching poorly. He hasn't had arm problems. So, you know, this is something that would seem to be correctable because 2 years ago, he was the hottest pitcher they had.
But it could be fixable. But you know what? On the other hand, maybe he's done. You know, things like this happen. All of a sudden, the lights go out. I mean, I know the feeling.
Yeah.
And
your arm went out.
The best thing for him is he's got no problems with his arm.
Yeah,
so that's what I meant. There's somebody out there out of all the clubs that are going to take him and they're going to fix him in some form and put him in the position that he should be put in to pitch, whether it's relief, middle relief, long relief, whatever it might be. Somebody's going to grab him. And I think he'll stick around for another 5, 6, 7 years with somebody. You know why? Because he's left-handed.
Yeah, you're right. But the Tigers won't get enough for him. Here's a radical suggestion. If I'm running the Detroit Tigers and I see the way Boyd's struggling here and a couple other guys as well, I know for a fact that Denny McClain, Mickey Lolich, and Frank Tanana all live in Detroit. I know for a fact they're all watching these games. What does it take for me to call up Denny or Mickey or Frank and say, tell me what you think? Tell me what you guys see. What do you think's wrong with this kid? But they don't, do they, Denny?
Yeah, no, they don't. Don't. That's a good point.
And I think I know I've offered a number of times last year and again this year, but you know, no response. But it is what it is, and they've got their paid personnel. They want to do what they want to do, and hopefully somebody will come along and straighten this thing out.
And they need to keep on hitting this way. With Candelaria with a 915 OPS. Scope with an 857. Yep. Sergio Alcantara, 1.29 OPS.
Oh, he had just a few at bats.
By the way, he was a 247 hitter last year in AA. So we're
here. Right. Hey, you know what I'd like to hear? You and Brandon are always on top of this with your Shep cuts. Do we have the replay of Shep ending the 19-0 slaughter and what he said at the end of the game?
I didn't think of that.
You didn't even think of that, did you?
I didn't think of that.
Yeah. You know, it's easy to criticize these guys. Shep was great. We're still getting comments on Twitter and elsewhere about how much people enjoyed hearing from him. But, you know, I just have some problems with the work ethic of some of these guys. So I'm on Tuesday, I'm watching Shep and I'm watching Gibby, and a guy named Brandon knows him because he's a fantasy player. I've never heard of the guy. A guy named Daniel Vogelbach comes to the plate from Milwaukee. He was an all-star last year, hit 30 home runs for
Huge
Seattle.
Dude, gigantic human being. Go ahead.
Yeah, he is. Monster. Okay, so he's waived by the Mariners. What? Then he goes to Toronto. They waive him. And then Milwaukee signs him, three teams in one season. And Matt starts to say, boy, that just shows you how tough. And Gibby interrupts him and says, what have you done for me lately, huh? Well, I mean, you got to do your homework, fellas. Don't just laugh at it. Tell us what happened to this guy. You look at a guy, for instance, like Tom Verducci, that is the National Games. They're reporters. They'd be all over this. They'd be in the locker room before the game. So what's going on, man? Three teams in 1 year, but they're not doing their homework.
Well, Dick they can't. Bremer, they can't be in the locker room.
No, they can't be there.
The room, unfortunately. But
so in other words, they bring guys into an anteroom because you see them being interviewed.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly.
Then bring somebody out. And
I agree with you.
Don't bring anybody.
I agree with you. If it was a story that they could have researched and they could have asked the proper questions and called the PR guy.
But you know what?
They could have.
Guys, you lose 19-0. All you want to do is get till tomorrow. You don't care what just happened. 19. I mean, please. 19-0. You just want to get to the next game and forget about what just happened.
And the other thing is, they just want to talk about their players too.
Yeah. Another case in point of this, Eli, I watched one of the Minnesota broadcasts of the Tigers games over the weekend. I remember this. It was a ball that went right down the left field line fair. It bounded up over the fence and hit that little.
It's in play. Wall. The wall
is
in play.
Yeah, but Dick Bremer sitting there, oh, my God, that's obviously a double. This is a guy who's done the Twins games for at least a decade. It's his own home ballpark, and he doesn't know the ground rules.
Well,
why?
Well, ground rules can be complicated, but he should. You're right. I want to go back a moment here to the Yankees because I read an article. I must have been in the New York Post because now the Yankees are struggling. Let's face it. They were supposed to run away with all this. As I said, they won 103 games last year. They would have maybe gone to the World Series if they hadn't lost to the trash can thumping Astros. However,
sign-stealing Astros.
Right. So, well, the sign-stealing trash can thumping. Now, Aaron Boone says, well, we still have time to turn this thing around. I'm confident we will, but we don't need anybody's help right now. It's there for the taking. The article, though, was about, and I was there in 1987 in May, the day that George Steinbrenner named Dave Winfield Mr. May, which was to rip on him for that's the only time of the year that he can hit, that he's a chokes in the playoffs. But the point being that Steinbrenner would have called a meeting, would have called guys out on the carpet, and he's not there anymore. The article said he would have done something by now. He would have stripped the general manager of his decision-making empire. He would have forced the manager to wait in his hotel phone by his hotel phone for orders, which happened to Billy Martin in the old days. I think I told you the story, but I'll tell it quickly. I was there in May when they were slumping. In 86, they were supposed to win the league. They were like 500. They were five games out in the middle of May, five games out. Steinbrenner calls this news conference. Dozens. I mean, so many reporters there, they had to split it up where the print guys went in first, like 50 of them. They had to leave the office. And then the 50 radio and TV guys came and he did two separate news conferences to rip the Yankees to say how we suck. So me from Detroit, I'm this innocent reporter from Detroit where we try and spin things positive and we try and look at the bright side. And I said, but George, you're only five games out. It was supposed to be a positive, uplifting. You're only five games out. There's still plenty of time, isn't there? He looks at me with this look of disdain and says, we're the Yankees, 25 World Series. No, it's not. 87 pennants. No, it's not. This isn't good enough. And so that is just the vitriol of him. And you know,
that's what Luke Voigt made headlines here in New York this week. That's exactly what he said. Reporters just talked to him. What's wrong? He says, we're the New York Yankees. Damn it. I don't want to see any hand dog faces in a locker room. We're the Yankees. And there's that mentality.
After listening to all of this, the one thing that they're missing is the big guy in the middle of the lineup. As long as he's out of the lineup, they got
which
problems.
One? Which one?
Which one?
Judge or Stanton?
The 6'9" one.
Stanton's 6'7".
Doesn't make any difference. The guy that propels everybody else and he protects everybody else is the big guy. Yeah. And I'm going to tell you, until he comes back in the lineup, if he does this year, they're going to be hurting because they have nobody protecting anybody right now. And with the big guys out, boy, and I'll tell you, it's tough to get good pitches to mediocre hitters.
It's a stretch drive, baby. Yep. Very exciting.
I'm actually walking by a gym in New York City yesterday in Manhattan, and there's a huge poster of Aaron Judge in the front of it. Yep. Just in his Yankee uniform, and he says, I stay in shape all the time. So when I'm ready to come back, you know I'm going to be 100%. When are you going to come back? And from what injury? The latest injury or the next injury? This guy is almost like Bill Walton's NBA career. He's just so brittle. It seems like he's always out of the lineup.
Big guys.
Well, you could compare him to Zimmerman, our Jordan Zimmerman. He's been hurt I think, almost every year except the first month or two of the season when he first got here in 16. Yeah.
Hey, did you guys happen to watch any of the Tigers game Tuesday afternoon, that disaster, that abortion?
I did not see that.
Did you watch that game? So I'm not just walking the streets here yesterday. I can't figure out where the game is. I want to see the game. And I finally find out it's on YouTube live.
Yeah.
So I got my little phone with me. I ask about the YouTube. It connects me. I'm sitting on a park bench in New York City watching my little telephone, watching the Tigers game live. Yeah. Obviously, this has been done before, but what a world. Modern technology, just beyond belief.
Well, I record every game, and I see every game.
Yeah.
I looked last night to watch the game, and it wasn't there.
Yeah, because it's only on YouTube.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question about a potential future guest. The White Sox, as you know, are amazing. Brandon has, laid out all their incredible hitters from, Eloy Jimenez to Jose Abreu, Tim Anderson, blah, blah, blah. So their assistant general manager is Bill Scherer. Bill Scherer pitched for the Tigers in 84. Yeah. He's a very good friend of Kenny Williams. Sure. Is he too obscure to get on to talk about what's with these White Sox?
I start doing polls of fans because they always want to know, is this guy big enough name to have on your show? And I'm trying to get Paul Gibson on the show. What a great guy he was. The problem with Billy Shearer is that it blew George Kell's conception of pitching. There are only two kinds of pitchers, as George knew. One's like Denny McClain, big right-handers, throw extremely hard. And one's like left-handers, Bobby Shantz. and a little left-hander. Billy Shearer was a 6'3" left-hander. Where does that fit into Georgia's plan?
But it's so, and so, and I talk about this a lot because I wrote a book on the 84 Tigers, and you know, we concentrate on Tram and Lou and Gibby and Jack and Dan and
Lance
and Lance and Herndon and Chet and all that. There were at least 20 fringe players that came through that year. Of course, I knew them all because I was with the team every day, but they just, from Doug Baker to Bill Shearer to Rod Allen, there you go, to Rod Allen, to Sid Mangi, to Carl Willis, who's now a pitching coach. Dozens and dozens, well, not dozens, but many, many passed through, and Shearer came there near the end of the year. Bob, why don't you bang on a couple of spots here, and we will continue with some college football. I want to talk about what's going on in the Big Ten, et cetera, and what the chances are that they may actually play.
I want to tell you about Luke Nowacki, as I frequently do, folks. Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. We hope you're going to consider Luke's credentials, his expertise, because they've been honed over decades as a financial advisor supreme. And that's allowed Luke to build a track record of success. He's helped families chart a path and then steadily, systematically guide them to financial independence. Let him do it for you. Let Luke develop a new path or refine the one you're already on. Set up a complimentary consultation. Not going to cost you anything. You meet with Luke at his office, or maybe now via Skype or Zoom. He's going to answer all your questions and then lay out a comprehensive plan for you to consider to fulfill your family goals, your business goals, obligations, whatever the case may be. Now, we're confident, and we confidently promote Luke Nowacki, because we've heard from his clients that he's highly ethical, caring, knowledgeable. And he's always going to be there to adjust and suggest when market forces alter the landscape. Here's Luke's number, 248-663-4748. Call him at Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. Other names of products mentioned here are independent of that. And with interest rates now at record lows, you really need to consider taking advantage of these market conditions and refinance your home with David Hall Mortgage. He's been a prominent voice in the Detroit area for over three decades. He built his business and his reputation of leadership in the mortgage market by consistently offering the choices, options, and the personal attention that separates David from the mortgage factories you see and hear about often in the media. It's why David Hall has so many thousands of satisfied clients. Hall Financial prides itself in keeping the process moving with a staff that consistently provides, again, the fastest service in the business. Ask Eli. Took him like 3 weeks to redo his mortgage. And this is how you garner nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners just like you. So go to DavidHallMortgage.com to get started. Here's an easy number to call if you prefer, 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
All right, before we get into basketball, and we watched some great basketball last night. Denny, you have one more baseball note. Go ahead.
Oh, one other thing. This kid with the Cardinals, Weiders, fouled
off. You talk about Matt Weiders, are you, the catcher?
Yeah, he fouled off 14 or 15 pitches. And when the pitcher came into the game, the first thing he did was walk a guy and walk a guy in with the bases loaded. Then Weiders comes up, and lo and behold, he fouls off 14 pitches plus a full count. He threw 10 strikes in a row at one time. And what it reminded me of is I had there was a guy with Minnesota Twins, Teddy Ulander. Good player.
A little lefty, little slap hitter, right?
Yeah, could really hit, could really play center field. And after about 12 or 13 pitches one Sunday afternoon, I yelled down to him. I says, enough is enough. Where the hell do you want the pitch? Now he fouls the next one off. And then I said, I'm going to throw you a curveball. Be ready. Instead of a curveball, and he popped the thing up at second base. So
yeah, a lot of hitters don't like to know what's
they
coming.
Don't like to know, boy. They just the don't trust though? You.
What is the record? Because I mentioned on this day in sports, the last show, that Richie Ashburn fouled off 14 pitches on a 3-2 count, which was apparently some type of record. But I wonder what it is.
Well, again, I talked about Birdie just and short. Roy Lee Howell.
Well, Bergie was just that was a 13 pitch at bat. Here's an at bat with a full count where 14 pitches were fouled off. Anyway,
there was a giant
10 in a row strikes he threw.
Brandon Belt had a 21 pitch,
right.
13 minute at bat, 16 foul balls.
Yeah.
Is that the Brandon Belt?
The Brandon Belt from San Francisco Giants. Yeah.
Oh,
Bob, you know what he's famous for, don't you? Belt?
No.
Belts.
Belts. Yeah, he's the inventor of the belt.
I mean, the kind you get in a bar or the kind you wear.
Just like Denny's 56-inch
belt. Or the kind delivered in Eli's favorite sport.
Stop it, Eli.
Boxing.
Okay. I know. You're a you're down to a 38, I know. NBA last night, Wednesday night, that is, I got to say, September 9th, 2020. I'm looking to think of the Celtics going to eliminate last year's champion, Raptors. And, man, they push it to double overtime. Kyle Lowry, 33 points. Man, heart of a champion. Talk about that. Now they'll force a game 7. And maybe meet Kawhi in the finals because the Clippers are up 3-1 on Denver. So I've been enjoying the NBA, which is a kind of a decent telecast with no fans. You kind of get the way they got the court, and you can do it with a small court. That's what makes basketball so much different than these other sports. Football and baseball are hugely larger fields. And they got with the little fake fans in the background kind of flickering on video. It's not a bad presentation. But the biggest question is, I suppose, in the NBA is, can the Bucks sign Giannis Antetokounmpo? We don't know. $220 million could be available for him in the biggest NBA contract in history if he stays with them, and I think he will, even though they got to sign him or else he'll be a free agent after next season.
And there's a story
eliminated again.
What story locally today that they're looking to possibly get Blake Griffin from us?
Yeah, so I saw that they made it. That's a big contract for an always injured guy. You know,
yeah,
I don't know what they have to take.
He's been injured a lot, that's for sure.
Yeah, but my streak is intact, being a lifelong gym rat and hoops junkie. I've not seen a single NBA playoff game yet. Really? And here's a story that's very interesting.
Why not?
More people.
Bob, wouldn't you enjoy it, though? I mean, you like basketball. Maybe. And it looks decent. I'm very surprised.
I promise you, I'm going to watch one at least. But this is very interesting, I think. And this is from Gallup poll. Who has more credibility than that? More people have a negative view of pro sports than a positive one, as public support for America's athletics has plummeted amidst not only the coronavirus thing, of course, but the Black Lives Matter movement. This is a new survey. Americans who have a positive view of sports dropped from 45% to 30% last month, and they go on top of these big shifts. People have had enough of some of this stuff, and this is not going to surprise you. As you might expect, respondents who identified themselves as Republicans soured the most on sports and all of its Black Lives Matter protests and national anthem kneeling, from a plus positive 11% rating to a negative 35%, a shift of 46 points in only 1 year. And it also fell 36 points among Americans who identify as independent voters. So, you know, I think the NBA might have done some serious damage to itself here, Eli. Now, whether it's going to be permanent, I don't know.
Well, the ratings indicate it. I mean, the first week they had super ratings, and the ratings have fallen right into the Atlantic Ocean. So, I don't know how they recover. You know, there used to be a time when there was a Larry Bird and there was a Michael Jordan, and you always had audiences.
Magic Johnson.
Now we don't have that particular guy. And LeBron is a great player. I mean, as great as they come. But I don't think he's got the magic that these other guys that we just mentioned have.
Yeah, I'm not sure the magic matters much anymore. I haven't seen any TV figures, which are always low anyway, outside places like Detroit and Chicago, on the NHL playoffs. I think it's utterly amazing what Tampa Bay has done without Steven Stamkos, one of the greatest players in the world. They're up 2-0 as we record this on the Islanders, having beaten them on a goal with 8 seconds left in the game. So the other one has Dallas versus Las Vegas. I would challenge most people to name a player on either of those teams. So we could be looking at, you know, I don't know. I mean, Tampa and one of those teams in the NHL finals, what are the ratings going to be for that?
I don't know. I don't know how much the Black Lives Matter has to do with the NBA. I'm sure it is somewhat.
Oh, come on. The end with the ratings drop? Come on, Eli. You know better.
Well, I've read a lot about this, and there's three or four other factors, including playoff games in August. That would be a factor, don't you think? The factor is that they're in a bubble and there's no home court and there's no fans. Don't you think that might be a factor? So there's a lot playing into it besides that.
I don't think
that.
The bubble so much is, but you're right. Exactly basketball or hockey season.
Now, how about
right now,
this? Tonight, when we see, or Thursday, September 10th, when the Chiefs open up. And by the way, ESPN has dumped Hank Williams with the opener, with the music. They're going to have players with social messages. They're going to play Lift Every Voice, which is the Black national anthem. They're going to replace Hank Williams with Chuck Berry, obviously a legendary Black performer who died this year. So you think it'll hurt football's ratings?
You're darn right it will. And I'll tell you this, they're catering to the Black player. That's what they're doing right now. They're catering and they're doing all they can to support and have great favor with the Black player. Mm-hmm. Because the rest of this
but
stuff,
not all Black players feel the same,
hang on a minute,
Danny.
Let me finish. Not all players and not all everybody likes what's going on. There's no mm-hmm. way. And I think the audience will have a negative reaction to this. Yes, they're going to have a pretty good number tonight. We haven't seen football in a long time. But you know what? This thing could fall off the bridge, too, just like the NBA has. I think you can take something so far mm-hmm. that it becomes too much. And I'm afraid yeah. they have approached it or getting near it. And, you know, it's one thing. You got to temper. Isn't everything better in small doses
I agree
rather
with
than
you.
Hitting you between the eyes? And that's what the NBA has not done. And I don't know if the NFL is going to do it.
You're
and,
right.
Now the two teams tonight are talking about protesting, not going out for the national anthem. So, you know, that's not the best
problem,
thing in the
Danny.
World to do,
oh,
boy. That's
a big
problem
with a lot of yeah. people.
That's a problem.
You're right, though. The leagues have capitulated in a major
Even Jerry
way.
Jones. Even Jerry Jones says, yep. I finally decided, I mean, who's a bigger Republican than Jerry Jones? I'm going to let the players you know what they want to do. Yeah. I mean, come on. So, you know, this whole thing, I learned something about myself yesterday and about all three of you guys that I did not know before and you did not know either. I am, and so are you, a non-POC. The University of Michigan Dearborn came under fire on social media Tuesday of this week after posting a promotion for two different cafes, one just for white students and another for students of color.
What's
virtual
this?
Virtual cafes
what is
coming
this?
Out
wait
on
a minute.
What? What are you talking
back
about?
Up. What does POC
wait
mean?
People of color.
One was intended for Black, Indigenous, and people of color, and the other is for us. Non-POC, non-people of color.
Wait a minute. Where
but guess
this
what? I am indigenous to the United States. I don't understand this.
Time out. Please go back. Separate cafeteria. What are we, back in the 50s?
So what they did was they created a safe space for people of color to have a cafe where they could discuss the difficulties of being a person of color. Well, I think there was some backlash because of that, and so they decided, well, we'll have a non-person of color cafe, which has a lot of people calling segregation.
Where is this now? Where is this happening?
Michigan Dearborn.
U of M
impossible.
Dearborn. But they have taken down the page, so I think it might be something that's going to be nixed soon because they no longer have their page active online.
Then this is fringe.
It's unbelievable.
You can't push for inclusion and then have segregation. Right. What the hell is that all about? That
obviously
makes zero sense.
And then in this wacko world, I didn't realize until just yesterday I saw an article. Do you know that they're going to play the French Open in 2 weeks now after the United States Open? So now the New York Post is reporting that the NBC TV crew, and they are excellent, John McEnroe, Mary Carillo, Dan Hicks, all those people, Chrissy Everett, whatever, they're not going to make the trip to Paris mm-hmm. when the Open starts a week from then. They're going to work the matches remotely. Mm-hmm. French Open announced Sunday it's going to have a limited number of fans. As you know, the U.S. Open decided to host none. And one wag on Twitter this very morning posted a picture of the amazing Serena winning her latest match into the semis with a quote, "I never give up," said Serena. "I've just got to keep going. She's amazing." So he asks, "Who's your favorite tennis player?" He says, "I like the tennis players that yell when they hit the ball. It's like watching porn." And it is. And oh, yes, we were talking about Ray Euler on the last show and his predilection for much older women, Denny told us about. Both Eli and Denny denied they had ever even heard of what I said is called granny porn. Iffy the Dopester later tweeted that both Eli and Denny had authored Academy Award-winning acting performances.
Bob, I have no idea what you just said.
A lot of
it's in plain English.
No idea. I know we were talking about something in a very serious vein. All of a sudden we're talking about granny porn.
The Michigan Dearborn thing. Okay. It's serious, and it's so stupid
that
serious.
That doesn't even belong on our
show.
That's fringe nonsense, fringe garbage. is what that is.
All part of the BLM stuff that's really kind of plaguing the country, even though, as you always say, Elon,
easy
you're
now,
right.
It
started out as a really good thing, and unfortunately, it's been co-opted by some people. They had a headline in the New York Post today. They had lineup pictures, you know, of some of the kids that they've arrested in the BLM protests in New York City. They had like 10 kids, every one of them white, from the suburbs, and a deeply troubled kid at home.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. Absolutely. Let's leave that aside.
Hey, I found out why they don't want A-Rod in baseball. Number one, they can't get 23 out of 30 votes to approve him because A-Rod is still there with Jennifer trying to get the ball club. And lo and behold, this guy Cohen, who's the guy that's supposed to be getting it, and they're supposed to be wrapping it up all in the next couple of weeks, I don't know how he's going to get approved either, because he was fined $1.8 billion for insider trading. And here's the difference. Yeah. Martha Stewart went to jail for the same thing. Yeah. This guy, all he had to do was pay $1.8 billion, and apparently he's got tons of it.
Yeah, I obviously you're keeping up with this very well, Danny. And so that's why now they're saying that they might have a chance to get the team after all, because of this guy Cohen's shaky background, and because Jennifer Lopez is actually the one who would be running the Mets now if they do it. I don't know if they have the money.
We have to say goodbye to our radio audience for the last time. I don't believe anybody wrote in.
They didn't. I noticed that.
So Toledo, if you're out there, we've loved
having
you.
Don't say anything. You'll regret it.
Wait a minute. Whoa.
It's great knowing you.
I'm going to have them all call you today. Every one of them I'm going to call.
Give me Eli's personal cell phone number.
Don't call me.
Yeah.
you and Toledo Radio, if it's still playing down there, have been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Hey, Feldman Automotive, Michigan's number one Chevy dealer. 5 locations, Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, Highland. 9 locations in all under the Feldman roof. Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Kia of Novi, Dodge Jeep Ram of Woodhaven. And I've been reading how there's an incredible push on used cars. People just want that second car, that used car. And Michigan's top pre-owned supercenter is Feldman's in Waterford, known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWN. You need a used car or a pre-owned car, go there. Fully inspected and guaranteed. And you can relax with the exclusive Feldman. Drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back guarantee. Can't lose proposition with the unmatchable kicker, their exclusive guaranteed credit approval. So you'll find what you need at one of Feldman's 9 locations. Let them earn your business and support No Filter Sports. You can also buy online at FeldmanAuto.com. Hassle-free at home or in the showroom. And Power Home Solar, another great sponsor of ours, America's fastest growing solar energy company. All their panels made in America. You save money with solar energy, you save the environment with solar energy, and you also help yourself avoid infuriating power outages, because they have partnered with Generac, the largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems in America. So you can put those together. That's Power Home Solar and Generac. Lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages forever. You can get financing starting at $99 a month and call 1-800-POWER-90. Save an additional $1,800. Support our guys, and hopefully they will continue to support us. You're listening to the I said I don't have to say that anymore, because you're still listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast and without Toledo, if Toledo actually exists on the map anymore. It's somewhere down 75.
Yeah, we need more radio stations. I disagree. You think radio is moribund. Perhaps it is, but I like radio. We you and I both made our chops in radio. Mm-hmm. We love radio. It's just changed.
Radio has changed. Radio is not what it used to be. Radio is struggling. As I've said oftentimes, radio is the Titanic heading for the iceberg, and it's getting there pretty soon. Not their fault. Radio is incredible technology. Changed the world. Franklin Delano Roosevelt with his fireside chats. Radio was so powerful that it was said the TV didn't have a chance, because, you know, radio was better, was more. You could have more on it, but not the case anymore with on-demand audio anywhere you like. Let's get
get to this day in sports, but we did not mention this the last show. We did not have time, and we can mention it today. And that's the backlash that Stevie Nash has gotten from some people over being named new head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. You
saw this. I don't
understand
why he's getting so much backlash. He was a great player.
Well, he's never coached before, Denny.
I understand that, but you got to start somewhere.
Yep.
So here's the thing. You know, I consider him to be a racial ambulance chaser, a la Al Sharpton. Stephen A. Smith. chose to portray the hire on ESPN as a case of white privilege, and he pointed to a number of black candidates, including former Nets interim coach Jacques Vaughn, who were passed over. Charles Barkley then called Smith out later on that night. He says, very disappointed in some of these guys. They're like, well, this doesn't happen to black guys. And I'm like, what? It happened to Doc Rivers. It happened to Jason Kidd. It happened to Derek Fisher. 9 of the 16 coaches hired without any previous head coaching experience since 1978-79 were black. So, and Stevie had to defend himself. They had the introductory news conference on Wednesday. He admitted, he said, yeah, there's certainly, we all of us sitting here on this show, we know white privilege. We've all been gifted unfairly so because of what they refer to as white privilege. But come on, Stevie Nash, they need to sell tickets over there. This is a New York Knicks town.
Here's the opposite side to that argument. Chauncey Billups is the number one candidate down in Indianapolis to get the head coaching job. I mean, Chauncey, good guy, terrific guy, knowledgeable guy, and he should get that job.
Well, Alvin Gentry, who is an African-American, greatly respected, said Steve is a tremendous with people. They're going to love playing for Steve.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
Sell tickets,
here, okay?
Eli. He's going to sell tickets.
No, they sell tickets if you win. Steve Nash isn't going to sell tickets. You know who's going to sell tickets? Kevin Durant, playing like Kevin Durant, will sell tickets. Kyrie Irving, playing like Kyrie Irving, will sell tickets. And by the way, if you run an NBA team, you got Durant and Kyrie. What do you want? A coach they respect. And Durant loves Steve Nash. Right there. That's enough to justify hiring him. And it's going to be the same as Juwan Howard at Michigan, if you can pardon the analogy, in that he's going to have great assistants like Jacques Vaughn that will help him get over the game management and other things that a new coach has to have. So I'm not surprised that Stephen A. Smith brought it up. I think that there's only 5 black coaches in the league. It's probably underperforming in terms of numbers. But if there's any league you shouldn't criticize for not being fair to black people, it's the damn NBA.
NBA
Give me a stinking break. Jeez. But Steve Nash is going to be great because Steve Nash was great. He gets the game, and he's going to be the Steve Kerr of the Nets. Another guy who had Kerr coached. Was he coaching had he coached anywhere before he got the Warriors job?
No,
I don't think so. So there you have it. Okay. It's a different league. It's a players league, and you need a guy that the players respect and that knows how to treat them and deal with them. And by the way, you got some real wild cards in New Jersey, especially with that lunatic Irving, who wanted to cancel the season and still believes that the earth is flat. So you got to get a guy like that.
Duke boy. Is that what Mike's come to down there in Durham? Taking kids like that?
I don't know. But let's get, we got Doug English coming up in a few minutes.
Yes, we do. Do you this day in sports or this week in sports?
I do the day before this day and the day after, which happens.
Good. Then I know what you're leading with today. Your hero, Sandy Koufax's amazing perfect game against the Cubs. Vin Scully still calls it the greatest pitching performance he ever saw in his life.
And I believe
that was Wednesday, right?
Yeah, Dick Krasuski talked about that on our show. Yeah. From a personal standpoint, I was 10 years old, really into track and field in the Olympics. The Olympics took place in Rome in 1960, and Abibi Bekele set the world record in the marathon of 2 hours and 15 minutes. Why was that such a stunning story? Do you remember? Because he ran it barefoot.
Oh, yeah.
He won the Olympics. He was an Indian. He won the Olympic, and he won it again in 1964.
What was that woman's name who was a great barefoot runner? Was she from South
Africa? Oh, yes.
There was one Zola of them. I can't recall.
Zola
Budd. That's right. Yeah.
I really remember a name that far back. Wow. Maybe I'm not senile.
You're taking a lot of Prevagen.
Here's one. I don't believe this story. This day in 1960, apparently, Mickey Mantle hit a 643-foot homer over the right field roof in Detroit. Nobody has ever hit a
643-foot homer. No way. I've never heard that number.
Yeah.
It's impossible to go 600 feet. It would hit the building on the other side of the street.
Well, but they're supposed to use parabolas and geometry and all that. But
the measuring stick for guys like Eli and me, who grew up, in the golden era of baseball, was we got our 1959 Topps card that says Mantle hits 565-foot home run off Chuck Stobbs, the left-hander in Washington. And that was the ultimate. Then I heard somebody hit a 600. Didn't they say Ruth hit a 602-foot home run?
605 or something like that. Mickey Mantle, by the way, in 61, the next year, became the seventh to hit home run number 400. So he was the seventh in 1961. How many would you guess have hit 400 homers in baseball now total? Give me the number. There was seven then, and how many now?
Okay, another 30, 35?
Bob, want to guess?
No, because I bet it's more than that.
57 that hit 400 home runs or no more. Amazing.
And this they're going to get to, they're probably going to get to 700 if they play 162 game schedule next year.
we mentioned Shep earlier in the show. Shep and Gibby, I think Bob brought him up. And Shep asked Gibby the other day about playing football and baseball. I forget what
I heard that. Up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gibby,
on this day, 5 days after hitting a home run for the Yankees over the Mariners, Deion Sanders returned to punt 68 yards for a touchdown. The more you think about it, playing football and baseball in the same season, what an amazing athlete.
There's only one reason why Deion Sanders is the second greatest athlete who ever lived, because compared to the greatest athlete who ever lived, Bo Jackson, he didn't have Bo's power. He didn't have Bo's power.
Better than Jim Thorpe, greatest athlete that ever lived. Pro football, pro baseball.
It was a long time ago. Athletes were very different.
I know. Denver Broncos beat the Patriots 13-10. Why do I bring that up? It was the first AFL game. And, man, did that league change pro football. They merged 7 years later with the NFL. This was the day in 1972 when the United States finally lost a basketball game as the Russians were given three chances to replay the final 3 seconds until they won 50-49. Elroy Face had a 22-game winning streak ending for the Pirates back then. Imagine a 22-game winning streak. And this was the
he was 18-1 in 1959.
Yep. Pete Rose, this is the day that he got hit number 4192 over Eric Schaumer, being on the late news doing that in 1985. And little Petey Rose came out of the dugout, his son, and what a moment that was. And who could have guessed that 4 years later he'd be banned from baseball for life? And that's
I think Wednesday was the anniversary of Urban Shocker's death. And that's one of the awful stories in baseball history. Shocker was one of the last of the great spitball pitchers. And unfortunately, he was saddled with a real bad heart. It's just a congenital thing his whole life. This guy, I believe, pitched in the World Series at age 37, helped his team win it, I think. We'd have to check this to be sure. And then he went home in the offseason. He contracted pneumonia, and his bad ticker finally kicked out. He died at age 37. Okay. Yeah, this day, you know, Wednesday, whatever year that was.
And one word about Elroy Face. He had the greatest forkball in the history of the game.
Oh, yeah.
And he threw it almost every pitch except on a 3-0-3-1 count. And he was unbelievable. Even when he came to Detroit for a very short time, he showed everybody how he threw it. Well, the thing about it is he had like fingers that were 3 feet long, for God's sakes. If he couldn't throw it, nobody could.
I had it in my notes to ask you about that. But then I looked at the 68 team, and he was there for like two games on that. Well, there's no way he would have had time to talk to you or everybody and show him how he gripped the forkball. But I guess
Bob,
he did.
Bob, contrary to the way you treat people in New York, we do say hello to everybody here in the U.S.
And on this day in 83, it was controversial at the time. It really should have been. Vitas Gerulaitis, an outspoken tennis player, bet his house that Martina Navratilova couldn't beat the 100th-ranked male tennis player, and he was right. I remember at the time I made the comparison when I did a radio show saying that Chris Everett was married to John Lloyd. Lloyd was ranked 405th in the world and would have to really tone back when he practiced with his wife Chris, because men are that much stronger, hit the ball that harder, and probably the top 500 men's player would beat the number one woman.
Yeah, so then Martina, as you recall, played Jimmy Connors, I think, in Vegas in an exhibition match, pay-per-view, which I bought because I was curious. And Connors had to use the whole court, and Martina just the doubles court, too, and Martina just played the singles court. And Jimmy beat her handily. Yeah. I met Vitas years ago here, and he had gone out to the buddy of Connors, obviously, and all those guys. Great, great player. He'd gone out to the Hamptons and rented a place, and there was something wrong with the gas or something, and he died of asphyxiation in his sleep. Vitas Gerulaitis, I don't think, was even 40 when he died. Terrible tragedy.
And will we ever forget Bobby Riggs?
That's right. He'd be right? Billie Jean King. He had to hit it into the full court. She had just the regular doubles court. No,
right. Jimmy had to defend the whole doubles court. She just defended the regular singles.
It's same thing. Bobby Riggs, same thing. He had to defend the whole doubles court. She just the singles. And he was 53 years old and lost. Yeah. And
people still say that match was rigged. Riggs, Bobby. They still say that match. That match was Fred Stolle, the great Australian legend from the 1960s and 50s, told me that. He said everybody knows Riggs. Riggs was a inveterate gambler. You guys know that. And he deliberately threw that match to Billie Jean King, and he cleaned up. That's what they say. I don't think he threw it.
He was pretty intense. Yeah. That was a pretty intense. I watched every moment of it.
I did too.
It was great television.
Speaking of gambling, I saw it on CNBC, that 33 million people say they will gamble on NFL football. Gambling, despite what's happening in sports, is up 19% this year.
Well, they're desperate. They want something to bet on.
Yeah. All right, Doug English coming up in a little bit. But first, of course, the mailbag. What do you got, Bob?
I got something right here from Twitter. And you can tweet us at Eli Zarrett, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. Brett Peel, known as the Motor City Mad Cat, says, Bob, I have no problem with you saying the FLs, no matter what Eli or Denny say about it. Until they actually win a division or even a playoff game, they should earn about as much respect as the Flint Tropics, the team formerly known as Tom Gore's Detroit Pistons. So, Denny, this is for you. It's a mush softball for you to hit out of the park. Tom Henderson writes in, and he says, on your show, Denny speaks fondly of his father-in-law, Hall of Famer Lou Boudreau. It's a fact that Boudreau, player-manager of the Indians, helped pave the way for Satchel Paige to become the first African-American pitcher in Major League Baseball. July 48, Tribe gave Satch a tryout. From Satchel, The Life and Times of an American Legend by Larry Tye. The tryout was next. He threw to Lou Boudreau for 20 minutes and had him stand in with a bat. As soon as Boudreau stepped into the plate, Satch almost ate him up. This is a great player, Lou Boudreau. And after a final weak pop-up, Boudreau dropped his bat, went right over to Bill Veeck, the owner of the Indians, and said, don't let this guy get away. We can use him. Veeck signed Satchel Paige to a contract the next day at age 42.
Lou told the story a lot, but the thing that impressed him with Satchel was not necessarily the breaking ball, because he had like 13 different breaking balls, Lou thought. He said, but the thing he surprised him with was a fastball. He said the guy could really throw, and he said the only question that they had was, how old is this guy?
Yeah.
He looked somewhat older than the 30 or 29, whatever he was saying. And Veeck signed him immediately. And of course, Satchel became a star.
One of the great oversights of major league owners in history was they could have brought the great Satchel Paige, Josh Gibson, and it would have helped the major leagues. It would have enhanced the major leagues. And instead, the racism persisted. But 42 years old when he finally made it to the major leagues. And his phrase was, or he had so many sayings. He was like a homespun sayings. One thing was, don't look over your shoulder. Something might be gaining on you.
That's right.
Joe G writes us, love the show. And I particularly admire your ability, the three of you, to go at it tooth and nail, yet be professional enough to just agree to disagree and move on and be cordial when discussing the next topic. Unfortunately, that's become a lost art in today's society, and it speaks to your guys' true professionalism. It says, I grew up as a boy admiring my favorite players, Jimmy Rutherford, Bill Freehan, and Greg Landry. He says, Rutherford's probably too big to appear on our podcast.
Yeah, I know. Rutherford any day of the week.
And I guess we probably should. He said, but how about Greg Landry? He says, Landry was so nice to him. His mom took him to a Lions practice at Oakland University. Kid ran up to him, belt high to Greg, looked up in the sky, asked for an autograph, and Greg was just tremendous. Like Frank Tanana, another one of my favorites. He's still local. I'd love to hear his thoughts. And I would too. Some of these people you guys recommend, we have no excuse for not having Greg Landry on.
No, I can get Landry.
Yeah, we'll definitely get Landry. Haven't heard from the pizza man, Freddie Bello, in a while. This is not a question if Bob is right or wrong on sometimes saying negative things about sports guys who have passed away. Most fans love the honesty, but some hate it. My question is, how would Bob himself want to be remembered after he passes? Of course, we hope Bob lives another 30 years to give us his great sports perspective. He says, thank you very much. Yep, fellas, you know you're either old or getting old when for the first time in your life, somebody says to you, how would you like to be remembered?
Am I going
somewhere?
This is interesting. We have Bob doing the mailbag, and somebody writing in about Bob and then Bob commenting on Bob.
Because I do the mailbag. That's why. Oh. That's why most of the questions have Bob in front of them.
Brandon, stop doubling over.
Brandon gets it.
I was just working on something down here.
And by the way, everybody, back to Bob.
Oh, by the way, okay.
Last one.
Okay,
last
so we'll one. Do. I'm going to take your
please,
advice.
Please
Eli.
Finish.
Here
please
we finish. Go. Here we go. Here's from our website submission, nofiltersportspodcast.com. Ask No Filter. Here's a guy named Patrick Campbell who writes, Bob has mentioned Don Rickles and Howard Cosell as his heroes. What a surprise. A-holes just like Bob is.
Oh, good. Okay. You know, Bob is so desperate for attention, he even will take the negative stuff.
Yeah. I'm just reading what
just
I
to
get.
Talk about himself a little bit
I'm
longer.
Reading what I'm seeing in front of me
another,
from the mailbag. I don't
another
put
another award-winning mailbag. Hey, that's great, Bob. 76089 balls or asknofilter@gmail.com.
I don't have any bad stuff or even good stuff about you, Eli. I guess you're not making much of an impression on people.
No, I don't.
People want to talk to me. They want to talk to Denny.
I am vanilla, middle of the road.
You said that.
Always prided myself in being noncommittal, unopinionated, and just the kind of
guy that please
stand
stop
in the background and not make any waves. Lions drafted tackle Doug English in 75 after he had been a first-team All-American the season before at Texas. Played 10 seasons for the Lions from 75 to 85, missing 80 with a series of injuries. He was first-team All-Pro in 82, made four Pro Bowls, and last year was honored as a member of the Lions' 100th anniversary team. So I want you to picture Doug on film in slow-mo here with one of his career 59 sacks as he is lauded in the Lions' 83 highlight film in the dramatic prose of NFL films and the deep bass voice of the legendary John Facenda.
English, number 78, had a career-best 13 sacks in 1983, enhancing his place among the league's true warriors.
I think the number one attribute for a defensive lineman is to be intense, is to come every single play, physically want to dominate each play and each opponent.
English's level of play is so consistently strong that he has become a perennial All-Pro. A fixture among the best defensive tackles in the NFL.
Ah, yes, the prose of the great John Facenda. Doug English joins us now. And Doug, we always knew you as an affable, easygoing guy, and yet you talk about the intensity. How'd you do it? How'd you go from a sweet guy off the field to the tough competitor who put up with all kinds of pain and fury all those years?
Well, there's a couple answers, Eli. Great coaching is important, and knowing that there's a time and place for everything. And, you know, one of the keys to playing football is that you've got to be able to play with rage. And if you can't turn it on, you can't play. And if you can't turn it off, you're not going to play very long. So, you know, it just, I didn't learn that on my own. I had great mentors and great teachers.
Doug, you look great. I mean, you look like you're in shape. You could play tomorrow.
Well, I could get in a stance, probably. My uniform would fit, you know.
He's 60, but maybe not get up out of it.
But by the way, you turned 67 just a few weeks ago.
When you left the game, any bumps and bruises and limps and knees and head injuries? Anything?
Broken necks?
Yes, all that. Yeah, it's all manageable.
Yeah. But, did you join the lawsuit that they have at all
for concussions?
I didn't opt out of it. I don't know where I am on that.
Oh, okay.
I'm fine.
Yeah, you look great.
Doug, we said on the last show that you were coming on, and I really have to tell you this. I'm not kidding. My Twitter account blew up. I'm hearing from people all over the place, fans who say, Doug English was always my favorite player. They're posting Detroit Lions football cards of you from your heyday years ago. I mean, after all these years and you went back to your native Texas, you are beloved in Detroit, and I know that must make you feel pretty good.
Well, yeah, I love Detroit. I love my friends in Detroit. Did we win a lot? No, we were probably kind of a 50-50 team on average, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. I there's a lot more to life than football and winning. And, you know, yeah, I would, of course I wanted to win. We all did. We did the best we could, But, you know, I've also seen guys that have gone to some of the glamour teams and really struggle with life after the spotlight, you know, goes off and the phone quits ringing. And they've really had a hard time making that transition. You know, the transition's important. I've talked to some of the NFL people about that transition. I've been trying to talk for years. I've been trying to get them to create a sort of an exit interview that begins with, okay, if you're normal, here's what's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
You're going to have these feelings. You're going to do these things. You're going to think this, and that's okay. But, and then have a program, you know, ready to support that. And, you know, I think they look at me like, oh, he's a lineman. Don't worry about it.
Well, no, they all say you can never recreate the intensity, as the word we used earlier. You can't recreate the camaraderie. You can't recreate the feeling of adrenaline on a game day. You've done a lot of things. I know you got into the oil business. You got a ranch now. You're working with the Paralysis Association because your career ended with a serious neck injury. Have you been able to maybe do better than most? Because you did have a plan and you have done some significant things other than sit around the house and wonder what my future is going to be.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm blessed with great mentors and great friends and a great wife and family. And, you know, you go to work, you know, I'd go to the locker room then. And then after that, there were other things to do. And, you know, I think I was counseled well enough to know that, you know, football was not that important on its own, that your identity is. And if you allow your identity to be anything but yourself, like if your identity is a football player, well, that's a short-term situation. And then suddenly you're going to be floundering. Or if it's your body, or if it's your voice, or if it's anything that you've created that you depend on other than your own character, you're in for problems. And so, you know, obviously in the radio and television business, you know, you guys have been able to continue to stay in that business, and that's good. And, you know, the day that you think that that's all there is to you, or the day that the trouble starts. I mean, there's a lot more to each of you than just holding a microphone.
You mentioned mentors. You mentioned mentors. Who were some of the better ones that you believe?
Well, you know, I started with the defensive line coach at Texas named Pat Patterson. Oh, yeah. That recruited me. And I'd only started my senior year in high school. Only time I've ever started a football game until then, I mean, in my life, was the first game my senior year in high school. And so he was at a game scouting some other guys on the team and saw me and went back and said, hey, I want to recruit this guy, and fought for me, I'm sure. At his funeral, his daughter was telling me some funny stories about that. You know, and then he was my coach also. He was the defensive line coach. And so my first start was the OU Texas OU game my sophomore year. Freshmen weren't eligible. I couldn't have played as a freshman anyway. I was kind of a late bloomer. And so in the Cotton Bowl is very famous for this long tunnel that leads to the field. It is dark and it's narrow. And you walk out of that tunnel into virtually a wall of sound and light. Because it's always in mid-October, always a bright, sunny day, and it sounds deafening in the Cotton Bowl because it's half OU, half Texas fans, and everybody's trying to out-scream each other. And I know he was waiting for me because he's standing there with his arms folded and looking up at the crowd. And so I stepped out into that light, and he looked over at me, and he said, this ain't no place for a timid man, is it? And then he just walked and ran onto the field.
Yeah.
And I think I had 16 tackles that game.
Wow.
So it started with Coach Patterson, and Coach Royal. Oh my goodness.
Oh, that's
you
right.
You know, the weekly, the monthly, I mean, every time his mouth was open, a gem would come out. And I know one time he told me, he said, Doug, he goes, you're really a nice guy. I said, well, thank you, Coach. He goes, you know what's happened to a nice guy, don't you? I go, no, what? He goes, not a damn thing. Actually, I cleaned that up.
Yeah,
I know.
You know,
I got that. And then, you know, when I got to Texas, Fritz Schirmer was my defensive line coach there. Just exactly what I needed at the time. He was all about technique and understanding body and movement. Went on to be a great defensive coordinator with Green Bay when they won all those Super Bowls. We lost him. And then along comes Floyd Peters, my man. You know, he done – everywhere he'd gone, he'd led the league. His D-line led the league in tackles and runs per carry, shortest runs per carry, and the most sacks. So he was a fantastic mentor. Knew just how to – you know, Bubba and I talk about him all the time. We still do. And he knew just how to talk to each player where they needed to be addressed. And he treated Bubba different than me and me different than Dave Purifoy and right on down the line. He treated us all. He was a master psychologist in terms of master defense. Michael. So those are a few mentors. I'm going way too long on that, but
no, it's right.
Just a few of many great mentors.
And I want to mention also the head coaches you played for in Detroit. Rick Forzano is one of the best guys I ever met, but I wouldn't have wanted to play for him. He was so tough on players. Then you had the Tommy Hudspeth disaster, Monty Clark, of course. Then Daryl Rogers takes over in 1985, and he moves you to nose tackle. Did you not like that? And tell us a little bit about those various head coaches.
Well, you know, starting with Rick, and, you know, I was a young rookie, you know, and I was young for a rookie. I mean, I think I turned 21 in camp or when we broke camp. And he was a good man, had a nice family. We really wanted to be Paul Brown. I think, you know, he was a Paul Brownite, and I think he probably, you know, like I tell my kids, be you, you know, that's why my email address has a 221 in it. We all have 221 in our email because the second letter and the 21st letter of the alphabet, be you. And I think Rick could have, he was very close. The staff was amazing. I mean, you realize who was on his staff.
Belichick, here, right? I mean, Belichick was there, wasn't he?
Raymond Berry. Mm-hmm. Was coaching the receivers.
Sure. Great man.
What better receiver coach than a coach that had won than a receiver that still has records in the NFL, known for his work ethic, had one leg shorter than the other, and half the defensive line could outrun.
Yeah. And Bob Schnelker was there, too. He was a hell of a receiver.
Bob Schnelker was there. Jerry Glanville. Joe Bugle.
Fred Hoagland played a long time in the NFL. I mean,
wasn't Belichick an assistant?
Bill Belichick was a gopher.
I know, it's a gopher.
Yeah, he was a gopher. That's what he was.
Yeah. I mean, what fantastic assistants. And some of those may have been Monty's. There's kind of a little bit of a crossover there. But you know, Rick came very close, believe it or not. He actually, we had a very veteran team at the time. And he kind of had a college mentality. And they clashed a lot, and that hurt us. And then so then Monty comes along. Well, Monty brings another fantastic staff. I think he got rid of too many of the leaders on the team too fast. He just immediately replaced the old guys. He preached a lot about character and hard work, but then he got rid of a lot of guys that demonstrated that. And that didn't set well. And so it took a while to get the ship turned around.
And he goes out, Tommy Hudspeth comes in, and Daryl Rogers after that.
Actually, yeah, Tommy was between Rick and right. Monty. And he was a wonderful guy. Okay. You know, he took over the team my second year, and we won out. I think we won all but one game after he was hired. And so really the Fords had no choice but to give him a shot, give him a whole year. I mean, we were 0-something, and suddenly we end up 7-7 for the year. I think it was a 14-game season.
Yeah.
Then we were, once again, we were 50-50 the next year, so that's when Monty came in.
I want to hear about the former Michigan State head coach, Daryl Rogers, and again, he moved you to nose tackle. What was he like?
Did you mean the one Stanley Edwards called an idiot when we had him on recently?
Yeah, Stanley Edwards called him an idiot, the ex-Michigan runner.
But you don't have to affirm or deny that. Go ahead.
Well, Daryl was probably a mistake. You know, I went down, I actually, you know, it was my 10th season to play. And so I'm following the Lions and who my new coach is going to be. And they hired Daryl Rogers. I'm like, who the hell is this? they were down in Florida for something. And so I just got on the plane and flew to Florida. I said, I want to go meet this guy. and sat down with him and said, well, I see you hired, I've lost his name. Who is the defensive coordinator?
Fonz. Well,
Fonz. Yeah, Fonz. Wayne.
Yeah.
I see you hired Wayne. We played against Wayne, his 3-4 defense. He had a tremendous 3-4 defense there in Tampa. I said, well, I see you hired Wayne Fonz for your coordinator. I guess that means you're going to a 3-4. He said, well, yeah, we probably will. I go, well, you know, there's really not a position for me on a 3-4 defense. And, you know, looking back, I kind of wish I'd have said, look, here's what I'll do. I'll be your player coach. I'll call all the defensive pass rush package like I've been doing for 6 years, 7 years around here. I said, and just put me in on second long and third and long and passing downs, and I'll come in and we'll run the pass rush package. And which is still a very formidable package. More people should, I don't think anybody's run it the way we did, but instead I said, well, looks to me like I'm the only guy around here that knows how to two gap. So I'll play nose for you. And a 6'6" tall, skinny nose man just was not the choice. And I don't know that my neck would have outlasted the season one way or the other really, but probably being down on that nose the whole season and not playing very well. So consequently, we're not even getting to rush the passer that much, probably did take its toll.
You played with some great guys. I was looking back. I mean, when you got there, you had Hall of Famers, Lem Barney, you had Charlie Sanders. You mentioned Bubba Baker. You played with Billy Sims, Dexter Bussey, some really eclectic guys like Dr. Freddie Scott. And as you said earlier, you were a 50-50 team a lot of times. And yet the Lions just seem to have so much talent, you included, always fell short. And I want to go back to some of these seasons and just the frustration that not just you guys felt, but all the fans and the media felt. All I say the media, if the media was emotionally engaged. Let's start with 1980. You start 4-0 after the 2-14 1979 season. And there was this, and speaking of colorful teammates, Town Dog Hunter, Spider-Man Allen, and David Hill created the now infamous song. Let's hear a bar or two, Brandon.
No, it's okay. It's okay. You
don't sound like me. I knew that was coming.
Are you ready for this? Are you sitting on the empty seat? Come and watch the Detroit line that no one seems to beat. Another one bites the dust.
So, but
well, Doug's a country music boy out there in Texas.
That was a good team, and you started, and you just fall just so short. The frustration you felt had to be, and then in 81, you're there again because you finished 9-7 that year, by the way, and lose a tiebreaker with Minnesota. Still could have been a playoff team in 81. Another fine team, and you finish 8-8. Freddie Scott, who I just mentioned, what a wonderful guy. You go to the playoffs, he doesn't drop a pass. So you seem to be snake bit. And obviously, as a player, that must have just devastated you when you give all that so much and your guys are good enough to go, and you just don't get to complete it.
Well, I don't have much to add to that. It was devastating.
None of us could. Eli asked long questions.
as a fan or as a media person observing these games, you see them sort of holistically. I mean, you see the whole season. You see the nuances. But as a player, you see it one play at a time, one practice at a time, one game at a time. I mean, you just kind of – That's really the way you play ball at that level. If you keep your head down and you play one play at a time, when the game's over, you look up and see what the score is. And so that's kind of the way that those seasons went. You know, you play and play and play. And then at the end of the year, you think, oh, well, we got a shot at the playoffs here. Well, okay, let's get busy on the game plan and go back to one play at a time. And it's just really the stats and the – all that are really not for the players. You know what I mean? At least they weren't for me.
Yeah. Doug, let me ask you a question. Why you got to tell us why you hated the song Bites the Dust. I don't quite understand.
He's a country music guy.
No, because they were 4-0 and it was
that
kind
isn't
of a
the reason he didn't like it because it wasn't country.
No, well, it was a bad omen. Go ahead. Doug.
That's a great question. I got a simple answer. Well, actually it's not that simple, but first of all, I don't like taunting.
Right.
To me, that song was taunting.
Yeah.
And I was watching it from TV, by the way. That was the year I didn't play. And it made me sick when I saw what they were doing, because when you taunt, what you're doing is you're covering your own fear. when the minute somebody starts taunting, that's when I know I got them, you know, because they're running their mouth and they're taunting. And there's way too much taunting in the NFL for me, period. And all it is a mechanism to cover fear. But the second thing is, if Lions had one advantage, it was that nobody was circling us on the calendar.
Right.
And guess what? When that song came out and they did their little dance in the end zone, then we got circled on everybody's
calendar.
You
sure did, right.
And sure enough, I think it's a big reason the season didn't turn out the way it should have, was because, you know, we lost our surprise attack, kind of.
With all the dancing going on today in the end zone.
I was going to ask that. Yeah. And Black Lives Matter kneeling.
Do you watch any of the games? Are you still a fan?
Well, I think they start tonight, don't they?
Yeah, yes. They do.
Yes.
I think you just answered the question.
I'm gonna always love the Lions.
Sure.
I have no problem with demonstrations to support the solution to problems. I got no problem with that.
Yeah.
I don't think they belong. I don't think you tear down something great to try to create something great. So I wouldn't do it personally. I wouldn't kneel. I wouldn't have a demonstration during the national anthem.
Sure.
National anthem is a national anthem. Maybe I'll get more attention by doing it that way, but by creating that negativity, you're not going to help solve your problem. The second thing, our country has problems, obviously. It's still the greatest country in the world. And of course, we're not perfect. We have problems. But to me, and to many of my former teammates, and many of them happen to be Black, agree that, well, the police are not necessarily the biggest problem. If you look at a priority of what are the problems of the minority communities, well, gun violence, gang violence, this whole gangster thing is not helping the community. Broken families don't help the community. It costs way more lives. Now, it could be open season by the police, and you wouldn't take as many lives as children growing up on the street, joining gangs, doing drugs, having babies,
right,
and all the things that I think plague this country. That's a problem.
You're right.
And that's a problem worth fighting for. And guess what? It's going to save a whole lot more lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I absolutely agree. Yeah, I want to. There are problems in the minority communities that need to be fixed. But as I rank the issues, the few racists that are in the police community rank way down the list. There's bigger problems to solve, and so that's my position on the whole social justice thing.
Right.
We've discussed that many, many times, and those opinions have been expressed here as well. So I want to get back to, you know, the frustration that we've had with the Lions for many, many years. We know that they haven't won a championship since 57. If there's any villain, and I'm not asking you because I know you're a proud Lion and you should be, you're on the all-time team. Russ Thomas is the name that always comes up. Remember John Woodcock, your teammate, throwing his shoes in the garbage can. He was so disgusted. You'd lose great players for $1,000. And yet Mr. Ford was a generous man. Look at the Ford Foundation. They've donated billions to great charities. So the Ford family is not cheap per se, but yet Russ Thomas seemed to be this thorn. Have you come to terms with that? Did you have problems with him? And is it fair to say that over the years, a lot of the frustrations during your era with all the great players you pointed out was because of Russ's relationships with you guys, the players?
That's probably above my pay grade. You know, Russ was good to me. He was a very tough negotiator. I mean, if you can't handle that, then you're going to lose. And I remember the last contract we did with Russ, Jack Mills, my dear friend, and was my lawyer and agent at the time. He said, Doug, he said, this is pretty much as far as I can go with this. This is all he'll give us. Mm-hmm. He said, maybe you ought to take a shot at it. And so I would go see him every afternoon after practice when he's wanting to go home. And so I'd come, and I was single. I had nobody waiting on me, and I could sit there and hear his stories and negotiate and talk to him as late as I wanted to. And so I just did that every few days, trying to work something out with him. And I think finally he gave in, and I got a pretty good final. It doesn't look too good today, but it was a good contract because I was basically kind of used his technique on him.
A lot of the tweets that I've gotten about you, how much people loved you in Detroit, a couple of them said, you know, I actually think Doug English was a better player than Bubba Baker. And I said, yeah, I don't know about that. Here's what Bubba Baker said about you. Doug English was directly responsible for my sacks. We played very well together, like peanut butter and jelly. He'd distract the guy who was blocking me, and I'd get free. Doug English came to work and set the tone. When I was a rookie, I came into the league on ability. I didn't know how to be a professional, but Doug English taught me. He had a pencil and paper, and that became the rule of our meeting rooms. When a bona fide all-pro like English is taking notes, the rest of us better take notes, too. Talk about Bubba and the respect you got from your teammates.
High praise.
Well, that's hard for me to talk after that. I've always, Bubba and I were always, and still are, dear friends. He was, all that stuff he said I did for him, he did for me. I mean, he would distract the lineman. He would distract's a code word for hold, but you know, he would make sure his guy didn't get off of him when I'm coming around and vice versa. I mean, he was fearless. What was he like? 19 years old as a rookie, something like that. He graduated from college early. His mom, Ernestine, was hard on him and got him through school and made him, give him a work ethic, and he got there. And 19-year-old goes to the Pro Bowl his rookie year.
23 you know, sacks, yeah.
And it's because he was fearless. You know, he would try any move. He'd throw his body. He's still that way. He's still I'd get him on the phone, and we talk and laugh. And I just always feel better afterwards. I mean, Bubba Baker deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. For way more reasons than all those sacks he got. I mean, he played run too. I mean, he wasn't a prima donna. He was emotional, but you got to do that. I can't say enough good things about my buddy Al Bubba Baker.
And you played with some really, obviously the Silver Rush defense. We haven't even mentioned the Silver Rush and your line mates, you know, not just Baker and you, but you had Curtis Green, you had Dave Purifori. And this is a story that I really, really like. And I talked to him about 20 years ago. That was William Gay. He's a tight end. And Floyd Peters, who you mentioned, your great defensive line coach, takes a tight end, makes him a tackle. Or no, in fact, in 83, puts him in a defensive end when you lose Bubba Baker because the aforementioned Russ Thomas didn't give him the contract that he wanted. But on William Gay's next to you, I believe, in the line in his debut against Tampa in 83, he broke the record for sacks in a game with 5.5. Let's listen to how that sounded in that game against Tampa in the opener in 1983.
Third down pass attempted.
Bill Gay.
Bill Gay was there to record the big sack.
William Gay, 6 years out of USC. That's the third sack. And he played tight end in college.
You played with some great teammates, including Bill Gay. Talk about the Silver Rush with Baker, of course, and then later Gay, and what the pride you guys had, and the fact that you have a line that has a nickname, and except for the fearsome foursome, I can't think of too many others. Talk about the Silver Rush.
This, you know, when Floyd got there, Floyd Peters, the defensive line coach, got there from San Francisco, where he had created the Gold Rush, was their defensive line. And they led the league in sacks. And he got here, he said, we're going to lead the league in sacks, and here's how we're going to do it, and you guys are going to be known as the Silver Rush. And I was like, oh, God, this isn't professional wrestling, you know. We don't need a name. But, you know, once again, Floyd was right. The thing about the Silver Rush, there's a couple of coaches that have come pretty close to coaching and allowing the players to play the way we did. But Floyd put the onus on us. He put the pressure on us. He made it very clear what he wanted to accomplish. And then he turned us loose to do that. And if we'd make up pass rush games, we made up a few during the middle of games. But it was a big thing we all said was throw your body. And we don't have time for me to go into all the detail about throwing your body. But when I work with young athletes, one of the first things I try to teach them is how it works. And real quickly, you got to program your subconscious with your conscious. Okay. Your subconscious is like your hard drive or computer. It's super fast, but you can't talk directly to it. You got to go through your conscious brain, right? And so you learn to trust your training. You train, practice everything the way it's supposed to be done. Then when the ball starts, the other thing we used to say is ass up, head down, throw your body. And just at the snap of the ball, you throw your body and then trust your training to do the right thing. Your feet to land, the hand, the punches, stuff to land where they're supposed to. It just speeds up time or slows down time for you and makes you go faster in reality. We get creative with the way we'd rush the passer. We try new things. Sometimes we just haul off and rush the passer, even though it was a rundown. And I'd be like, okay, I'll cover you. You go. And it worked for us. It was a great experience. The Silver Rush was.
And I used to think that all you guys did was spit and sweat on each other. But my last question is, tell us a little bit about the Lone Star Paralysis Foundation, please.
Well, back when I think my third or fourth year in the league, I was asked to host a golf tournament here in Austin. Well, I was a crappy golfer. I mean, I just go play golf in these charity deals just because I figured I could help them that way.
Sure.
And I was like, sure, I'll host it, free beer. I got real involved in the management of the tournament. And pretty soon, once I had my neck injury, I met Kent Waldrop, who's a great player at TCU, broke his neck, was a trailblazer in terms of recovery. And he asked us if we would start supporting his charity. So we continued with the golf tournament, benefiting the National Paralysis Foundation. Well, then it became kind of a pain in the butt to manage a golf tournament out of a checkbook that's in Dallas. And so I went to Ken. I said, look, I think we'll just start our own charity here. And that way people can write a check locally. We can manage the money. I'll put the money in. We need to get started. And then we'll just give you what we make on these events. And he was like, sure. Yeah, it's great. And we did that. And we started the Lone Star Paralysis Foundation. It's been about 20 years since we started that foundation. We've raised millions and millions of dollars. Operate what I call for our 3 R's: research, recovery, and recreation. It's the only research ever to make a distal nerve end come back to life. Period. This guy, I think Dr. Bittner is going to win a Nobel over the deal at some point.
Well, Doug, you've also worked tirelessly on behalf of alcohol and drug abuse. When you were in Detroit, you would go to visit schools all over the metro area for free, never took a dime, to talk to kids about the perils of drug and alcohol abuse. Ron Grubbs, one of our regular listeners, you may remember him. He covered you too. He says he was in the Lions locker room one time with Doug English. A reporter came up and asked Doug what coke cost at the time, meaning cocaine. Sports, as we all know, had a drug issue. He says Doug English was too sharp for this reporter and responded, coke, 25 cents a can over there in the pop machine. So I'm sure you've saved a lot of lives that way as well.
Well, it's I'll tell you one, pardon the segue. There's a little bit of a segue. One of the things I've learned through our work in paralysis recovery is that there's the myelin is a coating of the nerves, right? In the brain and the spinal cord. And this opened my eyes to solve so many questions for me. Boys' brains don't fully myelinate until they're an average of 26 years old. You know when girls' brains myelinate? 13. Oh, fully myelinated at 30. That's why they're so smart. That's why they outsmart us for the first half of our lives. That's why we're so dumb. At 25, 26 years old, we're doing stupid things.
Like chasing
people
girls
that want to go snort cocaine up their nose. They're just stupid, you know, and you know, they look back, if they have any sense at all, they look back in their 30s and go, man, what was I thinking?
Yeah, you're right.
But it's that's a big contributing factor to adolescent drug use. I'll tell you right now, they're just not fully developed, not making good choices.
Thanks. I got one more for Doug if nobody else does, because we can't do a biography, which is what we're doing on Doug.
Well, he has to get out and slop the pigs.
Yeah,
and
his ranch down there in Texas.
Here. I'm happy. Doug,
thank you very much.
Doug, you wore number 74 in your great career at Texas. The reason you did that was one of your biggest idols. Tell us what Bob Lilly, one of the greatest players ever, meant to your life.
Well, you know, I think every defensive lineman in the state of Texas wanted to get 74. Went on their respective teams because of Bob Lilly. I mean, he was just he was a great player. He was a giant of a man. He was on a great team. We just wanted to be Bob Lilly. And you know, it's funny, Bob and I became friends over the years. I would always call him Dad.
Great having you on today. God, it's been a while. Again, happy birthday. Turned 67. You're the youngest of this group today, except for our producer, Brandon.
You know what I got? At least 67, right?
Yeah, no, I'm 67, yeah, as of a week or two ago.
Well, mine's 76 Woo-hoo. Years old.
You just have a little reversal of digits there. Great having you. Great to relive the times of you here with the Lions, and continued good health and doing all the great deeds you do off the field. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Doug.
Well, you guys are the greatest. I appreciate your time and having me on.
Thanks, Doug. Really enjoyed working with you all the years Eli and I were in those locker rooms asking you questions. You were a gentleman all the time.
Oh, send us a cow, will you?
Send us a cow.
I need all the friends I can get.
I doubt that.
Bye, Doug.
All right. Hey, well, thanks.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good
night, guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to No Filter Sports. Appreciate all your contributions today. You can write us, talk to us, email us, and we'll see you again on Monday for another edition of No Filter Sports.
Bye, everybody.